Welcome back to the Clean Sailors Podcast. Let's talk about sea, marine, sailing, and keeping it clean. I'm your host, Holly, founder of Clean Sailors, and a sailor myself with a passion for the health of our mighty oceans. Through conversations with experts, innovators, and activists, all working towards improving the health of our seas, we're showcasing the people and projects changing the way things are done. Sails, like many things, have a long history. Maybe not as you and I would recognise them today, but the premise of mounting materials, whether papyrus leaves or animal hide, in order to catch the wind and propel ourselves through water, well, sails started way back. Originally, sailing wasn't the pleasure or the pastime we have today. It was born, like many things, from necessity, fishing predominantly, and then trade, and so on. As such, the materials and engineering of vessels and sails alike developed alongside the advent of more pleasurable yachting, as we know it, came much, much more recently, around the 17th century, in fact, with the Duke of York. Towards the end of the Clipper era, small working boats became popular, and the rise of sailing as pleasure for a few, other than for the elitist of the elite, arose. It's a fascinating history, how we expanded from local, safer waters sourcing food to traversing through some of the toughest environments our planets have to offer, like oceans, and some of the most exquisitely balanced pressures and forces, like in foiling. It is testament to human ingenuity and engineering, and not nearly as possible without sails. Today, I'm really excited to welcome a guest who's going to talk us through how he and his business have been looking into modern engineering of sails. I'm really excited to welcome Daniele De Luca of OneSails. Hello, Daniele.
Good morning.
It's good to speak with you. So, Daniele, tell us a little bit about, firstly, you. What's your relationship with OneSails and how did it come about?
I am one of the founder of OneSails, which has been founded 17 years ago in 2007. And since then, I have been also the CEO of it. So it's, how to say, it's my baby. I've been growing from zero to now. Among the sail-making networks, we are the youngest, but we are proud about being different and more creative, maybe. The idea behind OneSails is that we have been putting together many very expert sailmakers around the world. We are now 52 in 40 countries. And we are really sharing the expertise of everybody in order to develop our products, our service, our customer experience in the best way possible, because everyone in the group has a lot of experience and a lot of things to teach each other. It's very nice to see the way we work is that we have set up since the very beginning a sharing system through the cloud, and it's unbelievable how everybody can contribute and make our, as I said, product, service, whatever, better every day.
That's incredible. Exceptional growth. I mean, 40 countries is not insignificant in the time frame that you've been around.
Sail making is a very particular business because in most of the cases, you become a sail maker through your passion. There is not a school, a university. You can decide the only way to become a sail maker is to make the experience, starting from the boat, most likely, and then going to work in a loft and growing from there. But for sure, the passion is the first drive. And so it's been slightly difficult in the beginning to show other sailmakers which was our style, our philosophy. But then when they understood, we had the period where we have been growing faster than what was supposed because they saw the idea behind OneSails and they appreciated that.
That's incredible. And when you say about having the passion, I agree with you because most of us will tinker with most things on our boats, even up to the engine and the electrics. And obviously, aside from small patches, we do leave sails entirely to the professionals. So it has got to be a passion combined with profession because it really is almost like a dark art of magic. It's really quite exceptional to come up with not just the composite, the materials these days used in sails for the variety of vessels that obviously you cater to, but the extreme pressures and forces that are working on it alongside the design of the boat itself, you know, the weighting and otherwise, it's just so detailed and incredibly delicate, if you like. But to your point around passion, you're not just any sailor. So tell us a bit about your experience in sailing itself and don't be humble.
Oh. My sailing experience is too long because I started when I was very young, at 6 years old. And actually, the only strange thing is that I didn't start from the Optimist because I had an older brother. And so I started to sail with him on the Flying Junior in the late 60s, early 70s. Was a class very, very popular for young guys in Italy. And from there, I sailed all the classical Laser, 420, 470, Flying Dutchman, whatsoever, maxi yachts. It's too long the list to mention, but the good thing is that I've been sailing 2 America's Cup, 1 Olympic Games as a sailor and 1 as a coach. So with the wide experience, not only in terms of time, unfortunately, but also in terms of variety of boats, I could have a good overall view on the different needs. Because as you said, sailmaking is a job, is also an art that is a mix between science and personal feeling, let's say. And so what I think I could give to the group is having a very large view of our industry, a large experience, and so drive the help where is needed in the right direction. Because as a group, we are producing sails of very, very different kind and size and whatsoever. And so the need is very different. As well, for the same boat, the need for different areas are different. And this is where I like usually to define our group as glocal, because we are almost global, being in 40 countries. But the design and in many cases also the production of the sails is made locally. Because I usually mention the sample, the need of a sailor in the Solent is very different from the need of a sailor in the Med. But the habits are different. A day with 15 knots in the Solent is a light wind day where they maybe think not to go because it's not enough wind. Where in the Med, with 15 knots, they start thinking, oh, maybe it's too much, let's stay home. So also the sails must reflect this different style. And only with the local expertise, the real contact with the customer, we can achieve to deliver the right sails to the right person.
That's really fascinating. And I hadn't appreciated, forgive my naivety, that you would get down to that level of bespokeness when it comes to sails, because I think often you imagine that you have a class of boat and there's a standard format for the kind of sail that you would require. Tell us a little bit more then about how, I guess, because of your experience and the variety of boats that you have sailed, how have you seen the materials change over the years in particular?
As you said, the sailmaking is coming from very ancient, and it's funny because there are cycles where we are going back to something that was done in the very beginning, but with different materials. And the new materials are allowing to do things in a better way, lighter. But still, there are things that are very hard to change. The biggest example is the material for the Jennakers, for the spinnakers. The downwind sails material is remaining the same since almost one century. We are trying hard to change it, but it's very hard to make something that has the same performance and the same reliability. So on some areas, there is very little changes, where in other, there is a lot of development and research. And nowadays, the research has been, until 10 years ago, let's say, only the best performance. Where speaking about performance in the sails, we need to look at 360. So it doesn't only mean to be a sail that is stiff. It has to be light, it has to be durable. So the characteristics needed by sails are quite complicated. And I'm happy to say that about 10 years ago, the mentality started also to think about sustainability. That has never been a worry until then. And we have been the first thinking about that and creating something new that is also sustainable. So now it is even more complicated because we still have all the problems before. So the performance I've been talking, plus we need to keep an eye or take care about the sustainability, the end of life of the sail. So it is a really difficult task. Something that people don't realize is that a sail is one of the items overall, not only in sailing, in any industry, that has one of the biggest complications because, as I said, need to have a lot of performance characteristics, but in the meantime, is really misused. Nothing is misused like a sail because it has all the bad environment you can imagine. So the wind flogging, the salt, the mildew, the sun, whatsoever. Plus the sails, when they are hoisted, they live in their environment. But then when we drop, we walk on it, we fold, we throw away, we sometimes for the need of the maneuvers, we really misuse it. So it is the compromise between something that we really misuse, but then when we use it, we ask the sales a very accurate performance. Whereas normally, if I don't know anything you think about, if you have a very performing computer, you will take in care of using it properly. You will not throw, you will not walk on it, whatever. I mean, it's a strange thing that people never think about, but it is the characteristic that makes sale making a very difficult job.
It's fascinating though. And to hear you describe it like that, you're right. I certainly would never have thought about it in that sense where you are actively screwing it, scrunching it, keeping it in a dark, damp environment for months of the year, as well as obviously letting it fly and do its thing when you need it. So having that sort of duplicity of design specification actually has got to make that process really tricky to solve for both well and to keep its durability over time. So, I mean, talking about that, and you've mentioned sort of sustainability, and I would be remiss but not mentioning it, given the nature of this podcast. But why then are sales so hard to recycle? Just talk us through it.
Exactly for the reason I spoke before. Considering that the sales must be able to resist to the worst thing you can imagine, they have to be very, very strong, very reliable. They have to be stiff. They have to be in the same time light. So you need to use sophisticated materials. And at the end, the materials that has been using for a long period, let's talk about the top performing sales, because we know that then there is a huge variety of kind of sales. But talking about the top level sales, at the end has been used, is still used carbon, is used aramid, are used the resin glues that must be super resistant to everything. But this means that at the end of the life of a sales, these things are really difficult to destroy, are difficult to reuse, are difficult to do whatever, because they have been created with very specific characteristics and needs, where one of the most important needs is that they are undestroyable. So when it's time to destroy, that's the point where the thing becomes critical. And the solution for that is not easy. It is something we as OneSales with our R&D have been really looking for a long time, and we also found the solution. We are proud of that. But still, the reason why sales are normally very hard management waste is because they are created with that purpose.
You've hit the nail on the head. Not only is it just the environments that they're built to withstand, but like you said, they're actually actively engineered to withstand the misuse. So the whole point is you can't really break them down or destroy them very easily. And I'm really looking forward to talking about what OneSales have done differently in a moment. But I think, you know, for the last, say, 4 years about our project Resale, which, you know, we recognize that there's an end of life opportunity in the marine industry, whether it's, you know, GRP fiberglass hulls, whether it's sheets and lines, which are part of our network now. And also we've got sails as well, recognizing that actually, because of exactly what you said, there is no formal recycling of sails anywhere in the world. And because of the variety, right, the way I sail my boat, Dede, means that I've probably got a good 10, 15 years with my sail. The way you sail yours, give it a week. You'd never have a consistent supply of the same kind of sails anyway to make something really useful out of them at the end of the process. And like you said, because of what they're made of and what they're made for, the process of actually stripping them down is a highly intensive chemical process, which takes a lot of water, a lot of energy, which in itself isn't particularly sustainable. And appreciating the intermediary solution is really upcycling and reusing old sails, because at least you keep them out of landfill for a little bit longer, right? But also a very, very imperfect solution in the long term, because what it means is you, for argument's sake, representing the sail making industry, carry on creating the sails in the same way. And then further down the line, we've got to find relatively ad hoc, predominantly leisure consumer-based opportunities to make something useful out of them. But you've approached this slightly differently, well, very differently, in fact, and you've approached it really early in the industry. How did you approach, as OneSales, the challenge with end of life?
So the very first moment where I started thinking about there is something wrong has been at the end of my last America's Cup that was in Valencia. I was working as a sail coordinator And because we, as a team, we didn't get through the finals, we had brand new sails ready for racing that we didn't use, plus all the old sails, etc. And so at the end, one of my job has been to store all the sails in two containers, very full, packed up. And when I was closing these containers, and especially after the end of the cup, when I realized that the cycle was finished for those kind of boats and we're going to catamarans, whatever, I thought, imagine we were 14 teams, we were not one of the richest, and we closed two containers full of old sails that nobody will never use. So it's a huge amount of things that are probably are still there somewhere. Because there is no way to, we are considering sailing environment friendly sport, but are we sure it is true? Because if you imagine the waste that we are creating, and I'm talking only about the sails, because then there is much more, but my concentration was on sails. So I thought there should be something we can do better. And I started talking with our engineering team saying, guys, we need to not only look at the performance, but we need to look in parallel to see if we can do something better in terms of end of life. Of course, as you mentioned, this is one of the, I'm talking about the top technology, but then there are all the rest of the sails. So for sure, upcycling or recycling many of the items are attached to the sails is a good thing. Is for sure a good approach. And also there is, in some cases, the possibility to reuse the old cloth to create some bags or some, sometimes somebody is creating some dent or whatever. Yes, better than nothing. But still, at the end, those items will go in the landfill. But let's say better than nothing. The other thing is, as you say, it's much better to create sails that are lasting longer instead of having sails use and throw away. So again, the durability of the sails as they are for their purpose, longer it is, better it is for the environment. But still, in any of these cases, there is an end of life. And then they become critical waste. We sometimes collecting old sails from our customers, we have to pay to give to the waste companies, but I don't know what they are going to do with that, because also burning is difficult. In some cases, it's impossible. So this is where our approach to think about sustainability started and was 16 years ago. And it took more than 5 years of research, of tests, of attempts, failures, also frustrating sometimes, to sort out something that we achieved at the end that is now really recyclable in the real sense of the term, in the sense that can be milled, fused, creating pellets and recreate something. But I have to say that when we launched this new technology that is called 4T, it was 11 years ago. And I remember we made a press conference announcing all the peculiarities of the material that is performing, is light, is durable, etc. Plus, we said, as low CO2 emission in the production already, so in the very beginning of its life, is already, let's say, sustainable, plus is recyclable at the end of the life. And I remember that the most of the journalists was mostly Italian journalists. They said, who cares about that? I want sails that perform. Already 11 years ago, sustainability was not yet in the mentality. And I have to say that it's very different from area to area. We really see that, for example, North Europe is much more sensible to this than South Europe or other parts of the world. But the real change in the mentality in our customers, let's say in the market, has been done by the COVID. The real jump towards thinking about sustainability we saw after the COVID. More and more customers that are interested on asking why, how it's made. And also customers that I had some cases where for budget reason, a customer decided to go for another technology. And the day after called me, said, I couldn't sleep this night. I felt guilty. So let's go for the sustainable technology. Even if it's slightly more expensive, that is a good sign in the growing of the mentality towards sustainable technology.
It is a good sign, but to your point, I don't think you wouldn't purchase sustainable sails that were more expensive unless you also had the performance, right? I think for sustainability is an incredibly important factor, as long as it doesn't compromise the performance so much. You wouldn't buy a sail which is 10 kilograms, 20 kilograms heavier and had a few extra holes in it and couldn't quite maybe flex enough to be sailing upwind as close as you used to, but it was sustainable. And I think that's the biggest opportunity and also perhaps the most exciting and difficult sort of design specification is to solve, is how you manage all of that and without it being a compromise. Because ultimately, you're a business, like most businesses, you know, you've got a product, you've got a USP, which is high performance and exceptional quality sales at a price point. And there is a degree of flexibility in that, appreciate, as long as you're adding extra value. And of course, it could be moral value, ethical value, perceptional value, as long as it's not a complete trade-off, right? And that really is the balance and the skill to get right.
The task to maintain or even increase the performance, plus having the sustainability, has been a really tough task. And I have to say that we have been also lucky by some point of view, because in the beginning, the request was, okay, let's develop something new, keeping an eye on sustainability, but we cannot forget, actually, the first goal is to be able to perform better than what we have now, to be also in the market by the price point of view. You need to combine all the various pieces of the puzzle, just adding one more piece at the puzzle, but the other one must be the same. So the goal has been to increase. And there is a lot of research also for other areas. And actually, the key of our research has been a material that is an ultra high weight molecular polyethylene that has been developed by a Japanese company. And the development of it was for very different purposes, for bulletproof jackets, for artificial bones. So it was totally away from sailing. And the key factor has been that our main engineer, that is engineer Percarlo Molta, that is the inventor of our technology, found this material and understood that that could be the key that will close the puzzle. And actually, it was true. That material is has incredible, exceptional performances. But on the other hand, consider that it is used to do the artificial bones. This means that it is a material that is very difficult to attack from chemical agents, from anything, so much that also the glues are not sticking on it. So we had to develop a different way to put together all the components of the sail. And actually our sails, our 40 membranes are made not by glue or by chemical reaction, but are made by the fusion. So it's a physical reaction to fusion of the materials that in a very peculiar process the engineer Molta has been inventing. We fuse the sail, all the components, and we put all together by fusing. And this has been the other key factor of sorting out that this way we can have all the different parts of the sail. So the main structure made with this ultra high weight molecular polyethylene, plus the external surfaces, the abrasion protection, the UV protection, the secondary load holding, etc. They are all coming from the same original molecular, differently treated. That is the same as PE. So it's the same as the plastic bottles at the end, just treated differently. And this is the reason why at the end of the life of our sails, we can mill, fuse, create pellets, and redo something. We did really the full cycle, because everything I'm saying, but I like to underline it, everything I'm saying and everything we are declaring is officially certified following the ISO rules. So the standard official certified rules, and is certified by third party. Because as I said, where in the past environmental sustainability was not a problem, now is in the mouth of everybody. Everybody is trying to tell something about sustainability. And I am starting to see, not only in sail making, but in the industry generally, a lot of people that is greenwashing. We have been following only the official path, and only the certification can really demonstrate that what you are telling, what you are declaring is true. And on top of that, and I go back to the original argument, we wanted to really demonstrate the full cycle. And we did it with the last Vendée Globe. We made the sales for a team that was an English team, Pipers team, Medaglia. The sales had been successfully doing the regatta around the world. And by Pip's declaration, she said, are so good that I could do one more lap around the world without problems. They are so durable. But still, the purpose of this operation has been to demonstrate that are recyclable. So we took the sail, we chopped all the items, the rings, the leech lines, whatever, around the sails. We took the body of it. We went into a standard recycling industry where they are recycling the plastic bottles. We put in the sails. We got the pellets. With those pellets, we created the pencils, sunglasses, headboards, button rockets. So we created other items. So it is proved that this is real and is possible to do without any special, because the other thing is you can create something that is recyclable. But if recycling cost in terms of water, of energy or whatever, more than what you save, again, you are not doing something helping the environment. So there was the need that it goes into the standard process, what is normal, and we did it. So the material and the only way we could achieve it is to have the same original molecular, because when you fuse and you mix everything, you go back to the original. I know that it is a bit complicated concept, but I hope I could explain in a very basic way.
You explained it perfectly, Dede. And I think firstly, it's such an incredible achievement, and to have done it arguably so early on in comparison to perhaps an industry which is continuing to, in all honesty, still accept the opportunity around not just end of life, but actually looking product and material design differently. So by using heat and pressure rather than a chemical one, as you so pointed out, you're more readily and able to reconstitute the materials into something different. So you're not spending the time, or like you said, the chemicals and the water, in trying to pull apart a variety of different laminates and glues. Importantly, that's always the trickiest part, is the glue. You're not spending time pulling all of that to pieces in an exceptionally high energy way. Rather, you already have deconstructed sail, in a sense. It's just sail. So you just apply a different kind of heat and pressure to reduce it into another material substance that you can reuse as something else, as you said. And the Pippa Hare example was really fantastic. And I remember that quote around her being ready to go around again. I mean, it's just phenomenal. We are talking, as you'll well know, about one of the most formidable environments on the planet, the Vendée Globe in particular, not least because it's a race, right? You're doing something not just in a really high intensity, high winds, UV, salt water, the lot, but you're doing it as fast as you possibly can. So the torsion and the pressure and the forces that you're putting those sails under are pretty unparalleled. What I'm really interested in, Dede, is the fact that it's possible, and it's possible if you ask the right question. And what I'm really intrigued to know from you as sort of a co-founder and also as a CEO, what did you ask? What was the premise with which you went into your Forte 4T sales with differently? Was it just create another sail better, stronger? Was it lighter? What was it that you wanted to create that the outcome was something that was actually fully recyclable by all of the modern standards? How did you think differently going into that specific process?
You know, it was the combination of the story of the containers I've been talking about, and also the fact that we were in 2008-9, in that period, the most of the sales of any brand, of any technology, again, talking about the high level, top level sales, were made with mylar and with the carbon or aramidic fibers. Almost every sail maker made differently whatsoever, but it was a constant. That was a super smart invention made in the 90s. So it was more than 20 years that there was no development. And these materials were performing well, but they had some weaknesses. Apart from the sustainability, we know that carbon is an exceptional material, but is fragile. And so it was breaking by the time, by the flaking. Again, if you laminate into a rigid hull, it has no problem. It can last forever. But having the sails, the need of being flexible, carbon is not the ideal material, because when you glue it, it becomes brittle. The mylar was suffering a lot UV, and by the time was becoming, again, brittle. They was opening small windows. Being transparent was not protecting the glue inside. And so the glue was at a certain point crystallizing and we had the delamination problem. So it was a very good results for the 90s. But in the 2010, it was not a good material. And I said, how is it possible that after 20 years, we are still building the sails with the same materials that we know had problems? And this has been the starting point. So we need to change, find something different from the carbon. We need to find something different from mine. And this is where our patent went. And there has been other solutions around in the market and going into that direction. And actually nowadays, we see the mylar and the sails based on mylar are almost disappearing because the whole market has gone into that direction. As I said, by chance, because we have been lucky and also because we have been thinking about that, this is what we are proud of. The solution we found is also sustainable. But I like to underline, as you said before, that the first goal has been to achieve the performance, to overtake the performance of the mylar and the carbon in terms of stability, shape holding, lightness, durability, and then sustainability.
Otherwise, you don't have a business.
Exactly.
I think that's an important thing. And actually, it's a really complicated area. And I appreciate that by virtue of, say, clean sailors, it's easy to come at it from an environmental perspective, right? That's in some ways the challenge. But as a business person myself, you have to understand that you create a product that is deemed valuable to a market enough that you can create income and revenue to create more products, to create more value to a bigger market, right? And ultimately, I think we're seeing a certain, you know, massive shift in mindset from all of us around, yes, of course, I'm going to choose a company if I have an option to, which has the environment in mind, and also myself, my own health, well-being, whatever in mind, over one that does not. But ultimately, especially in sort of the macroeconomic climate, which we still live in today, over the last couple of years in particular, price and product, you know, the performance of the product still trumps. So if you can do the sustainability alongside, as you have done exceedingly, it puts you in a really unique position. But I think you've said luck a couple of times, which is fascinating because given your esteemed sailing background and otherwise, I'm not sure I can put anything of what you've achieved down to luck. I think it's opportunistic, asking the right questions, I think importantly. A lot of different companies, as you've seen, approach the same. How do we get past mylar? How do we get past the carbon point? But have approached it from a very different angle to perhaps you and OneSails have. So I hear you. It's a humble thing. And I do believe in luck, but I think that it's come out of what we've all seen to be a very sincere and lengthy, you know, expensive in time and expertise and otherwise process that you've gone through with your company to try and do something really different. So for that, it's pretty incredible and really cool. What is next for OneSails? I mean, appreciate that just in some of the words that you've been using that things haven't progressed in, say, 20 years or you've Forte 40 is now not brand new. So how are you in your mindset and your philosophy still looking at progress, making things stronger, lighter, high performance, more durable? Because it doesn't stop, right?
No, it is a never-ending process. You know, before launching something new, there is a long process of research in the beginning. Then as soon as the theoretical phase ends, you start doing the prototypes. Then you test the prototypes. There are a lot of laboratory tests that can simulate the aging, the sun, whatsoever. And they are getting better and better. They are pretty accurate, but still the reality is always worse than the simulation. So the only real test at the end is the use of the sails. And of course, by the time we are now starting to realize that the very first sales that we did, so 8-10 years after, that there could be some weak point. There is something we can do better. So through the years, getting the results of the real life of the sales, we sort out the possible problems and we go forward. Actually, our 4T, we did already 3 different releases of the 4T, always based on the same concept. But, you know, it's like a cooker. We are changing the ingredients. So we are like the sophisticated chef. We are now going to launch our 4th release, probably this summer, that the goal we are looking to achieve is the life of the sails. So less sails our customer will have to change, better it is. Maybe not for our budget because they will spend less. But at the end, what we are hoping is that as soon as people will realize that our sales are lasting longer, and you spend the same money, you spend less. We hope that this will increase our market share. So we are not looking to sell more sales to the same customer. We are looking to get more customers. That's the goal. And I'm really looking forward because our next release, by all the laboratory tests we did, looks undestroyable and even better than the other ones that are already good. So that's the goal, to continuously increase the ability of the sales to hold the misuse. Because at the end, if we could hoist a sail and go sailing in his range of use all the time, will last much longer than being mistreated in the lockers of the boat or walking on it or in wherever.
It's just so cool. It's the only thing I could think to say right now, because I think, as you said, the sort of design iteration, the sort of production iteration, the manufacturing iteration, the composition sort of iteration is just so profound. And the smallest of tweaks can have the most pronounced output in terms of what it is that you're trying to achieve ultimately with that performance. So it's just so cool. The only thing I can ask, Dede, given your background and your experience on the matter, for every ordinary sort of sailors, blue water cruisers, what are your tips for looking after sails?
You know, for sure, the way you take care of your sails when you are not sailing is store it properly. That means dry, possibly rinse by fresh water, so with no salt. But anyway, even if with salt, avoid to leave it under the sun, because even if nowadays there is a lot of UV protection, the sun is very powerful, we know, and is affecting in any case, maybe not the body of the sails, but maybe the perimeters, the materials we are using for the finishing. So for sure, avoid to leave it under the sun when not needed. Avoid mistreating it in terms of folding badly, or even, it's funny because sometimes people think that rolling the sail is the best way to keep it. That is true, because if you roll the sails and then you put on top of each other and the roll is squeezed, it becomes better to, or you may fold the roll, it is better to fold with bigger fold than doing that. So take care of, for example, release the buttons. Don't leave the buttons under tension when you are not using the sail for a long time. When you don't use the sails, most likely the leech lines that are made by Dyneema will shrink a bit. So next time you will use, probably there will be the need to ease the leech lines. But it's not a problem. It's normal. It's physical. The stability of the sail is way bigger than of the lines. So they are stretching in a different way. Again, if it's possible, don't fold, roll, whatever, and then store big piles of sails where the lower one will be really squeezed. If we are talking about rolled sails, when you fold the roll, the sail is really misused, because you squeeze the roll and then you fold it. It's a really ugly thing you're doing to the cloth. Okay, when it's needed, but when it's not needed, it's much better to unroll it and fold it. Also, the other thing is don't let the sail flog a long time in the wind, okay? During a tack, okay, during a maneuver, but the flogging is anyway damaging any kind of sail. The flogging can also come from a bad trim. You can see often sails with too much twist where the top part of it is flapping all the time. That part is suffering, no way, regardless the material.
I hear you. And I think it's always kind of a sorry sight, isn't it, to not see a sail just full as it's supposed to be, being used for its purpose. And that's a pretty comprehensive list. And I really appreciate it, because they're also not inexpensive things, sails. So being well looked after is a pretty important point of keeping them absolutely optimum. Dede, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about OneSails and what you've achieved so far. I'm really pleased that you could join me for this conversation, and want to say thank you, and obviously all the best with your iteration and tweaking, particularly of your 4T sails.
Thank you very much. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to explain what we are doing. It's been a pleasure for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dede.
You've been listening to the Clean Sailors podcast. All relevant links to the projects and people we talk to can be found with the podcast link. For all episodes or to get in touch, just visit cleansailors.com. We love to hear from you. We believe that great ideas should be shared, which is why our podcast is free to appear on. So if you've got a project, idea, or topic you think we should be discussing, get in touch. In the meantime, Thank you for listening and see you for the next episode.